Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast, you know it's going to be a good show when this happens.
Buckle up, because this is going to sound crazy. Also, Pod, if you could edit out anything that makes me actually sound high, because I'm not high right now.
You know, you just took the words out of my mouth, really, because in some type of pipe dream.
And what exactly were those two talking about?
First off, if you go up to any NFL player, one, they're physically imposing. And two, most likely, they have a super hot girlfriend with them. So that means nothing.
Yeah, we got a whole lot of stuff. Plus, Eric Galco joining us. Here we go.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Welcome to the This Will Be Like No Other Next Fan Up podcast. Hello, everybody. I am Pod Vader, and I am saying that because I say before every show when we do our pre-show planning that this will be the shortest show we ever do. Today, I still feel like this will be the shortest show we ever do. Will it be sub 1 hour? Only you will know because you've already seen what the time is on the iTunes. Anyway, that didn't go where I wanted it to go. Let's bring in the super fans that are joining me on today's show. Chock full of great stuff. And we will begin with our only Thursday regular from Prison Zone 6. It is our Cowboy super fan, Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Pod. Hello, everyone. I have some big news for everyone today. And that is Tony Romo back in the news. He's going to try and qualify for the U.S. Open this year. And if anyone cares, which they should, it's going to be great.
Well, this is not golf today, so we will not be covering that story at the present moment. But it makes sense that he would be sitting next to Jim Nance. Speaking of Jim Nance, he introduced himself by saying that he was Jim Nance. It is your partner in Prison Zones, Prison Zone 1, our Miami Dolphins superfan, Andy. Hello, Andy.
Hello, friends. Jim Nance here. I actually say that when I enter a room at work a lot of the time. So I'll enter a conference room, say, hello, friends, Jim Nance. And people who don't watch football don't, or people who don't watch football or the Masters, don't know what I'm talking about, but this is the quiet time of the NFL season, so maybe we won't have very much to talk about today other than, of course, Jim Nance and Tony Romo, who will be working together, actually, next year.
Exactly. You know, the two guys I normally go to when I'm entering a room, announcer-wise, is you are looking live, good old Brent Musburger, and the man who actually never said, whoa, Nelly. Yes, Keith Jackson. Also not Keith Jackson is Rob, our Buffalo Bills super fan. Hello, Rob.
Hello. I'm not Keith Jackson, but I'm following Brett Musburger because he's giving out Las Vegas gambling tips now. I love the transition from commentating to sports handicapper.
It's a natural transition for Brent. That's all I can say about that. And the last person to be introduced here on today's show is our super fan for the Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego. Hello, Ken.
Ooh, you almost got me there by not saying of San Diego. I am fired up this morning.
Ooh, fired up. I like it. Yes, on my list of things that we will be discussing later on in today's show, Ken has a rant is one of our topics. We'll also have a quick fantasy chat based on the NFL draft that just occurred. Speaking of NFL drafts, I'll be talking with Eric Galco of Optimum Scouting and the Sporting News in just a few minutes, and we'll be talking about that 2017 NFL draft. Jamaal Charles has a new team, and Doug Whaley, he doesn't have a new team, but he has an old team. So those are some of the topics we'll be getting into on today's show. If you have a question or an email or a thought or anything like that, you can always send us your notes to nextfanup@gmail.com, just like Ernesto did. You may remember Ernesto from our earlier shows where he had emailed in about the Bears just bearsed all over themselves in the draft this year. He writes, quick follow-up. I teach high school history, and today my students had to present their final projects for this unit, puppet shows about the French Revolution. So in one of them, Louis XVI turns to Voltaire and says, you suck more than the Bears front office. I mean, Mitch Trubisky? Even the kids are scratching their heads. First of all, there's so much about this email that's just incredibly awesome. High school students doing puppet shows about Louis XVI and Voltaire. I mean, this is borderline Game of Thrones material here, Rob.
It is. You lost me. The only Louis I know is Louis XIII, and that's only because it's a delicious champagne cognac. I am not brushed up on my history, unfortunately. Yeah, so, I mean, I know I see on my Twitter feed Bears fans up in arms, but the way I look at it is the GM has now put his job on the line, you know, for the quarterback that he believes in. So, you know, I mean, let's see what happens. Give it a, you know, give it a shot.
I thought you were going to say the only Louis you knew is our Denver super fan, Louis.
I guess I know that Louis too.
Yeah, well, there you go. Ken knows our Denver super fan, Louis. Because they're in the same division, but that's about it.
Yeah, but I'm glad we haven't met in person because I hate the Broncos.
So there you go. Thanks, thanks Ernesto, for emailing nextfanup@gmail.com. Be like Ernesto. We love your emails. Send them in. You can also tweet us at NFU Podcast. You can check out all of our great stuff on our website, www.nextfanup.wordpress.com. And we've got some exciting shows coming to you over the next month. Next months, we'll have the division previews. You'll get my way too early win-loss predictions that never, ever come true. I will be a big fan of the Jaguars. I think... I've been on record as calling the Jaguars my boyfriends for this upcoming season. And my breakup from the Kansas City Chiefs continues to go down that rocky road. And speaking of that, why don't I just toss to my interview with Eric Galco, as we're going to talk a lot about what the Kansas City Chiefs did and the man known as Patrick Mahomes. All right, it's my pleasure now to do a little more draft reaction with a guy who's been on the show before. It's been a long time, though. That's Eric Galco of OptimumScouting.com and Sporting News. Hello, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing post-draft?
Oh, it was certainly a whirlwind, for sure. Although, I don't know if it was that much of a whirlwind. I think we had a lot of excitement in round one, but... after that, you know, did anybody really have a bad draft?
You know, I think, and we'll get this more later on, but it depends what you think of the quarterbacks. If you think that Trubisky was a bad pick at third overall or second overall when they moved out for him, and the Bears had a really bad draft. But if he works out, he works out. But no, I mean, it was really deep class at four or five positions. And I think teams were able to get a starter quality player in round two or three. And really, if you can get, you know, four NFL players that could be your team long-term and two starters, it's usually a good draft. So I think a lot of teams take advantage of the great secondary and pass rushing class.
Yeah. So the reason why I reached out to you, because you touched on it and we've been talking a little bit back and forth, is sort of the feeling of the quarterbacks in this draft. And if you like the quarterbacks, then the draft was okay for you. If you didn't like the quarterbacks, like myself, and didn't feel that any of the quarterbacks were worthy of a first-round pick, then as I looked at it, the Chiefs really screwed up. And I'll sort of go in chronological order the way that the night sort of unfolded for me as I was watching that first round. And I had the tweet ready to go for the Browns because of all the rumors that they were ready to take Mitch Trubisky at number one. And I was like, well, that would be the typical Browns thing to do. And then the Bears moved up the one spot to take Trubisky, and I was like, oh, that's just horrible. But in hindsight, with watching what the Chiefs did to move up and what the Chiefs gave up to get Patrick Mahomes, that to me is where the mistake was. They really overpaid for a quarterback that I don't feel is going to fit in the NFL.
Yeah, so that's where we disagree. I think Patrick Mahomes was the best quarterback in this draft class. I think the Chiefs certainly agree, and other teams did as well. But I think for two reasons. One, you know, we can go into Mahomes and why he's a special quarterback, the arm talent, the maturity, the mental capacity, the 4.0 academic All-American who's really impressed teams throughout the process with his mental processing ability and ability to adapt. And I think his redshirt year in the NFL is going to be purely based on, you know, making the adjustment from Texas Tech, but more importantly, footwork and play progressions, not mentally. He can destroy teams' expectations on the whiteboard. He did that really well. I think for the Chiefs, what's most interesting to me is that I had reported their interest in him really all year. The Chiefs wanted Patrick Mahomes since before the season even started. They had their eye on him that early before he was, you know, a second-year starter, before he went to his junior year. They sent their assistant GM, now Colts GM, Chris Ballard, 3 times to go see him live. That's very rare for a high-level executive to see a player 3 times live in one season. So they had their interest in locking on him for a while, and you know, they didn't want the Saints to take him or the Cardinals to take him, moved up in the draft. And I think the Chiefs, well, we can look at that as saying, hey, like or love Patrick Mahomes, it seems like a lot. This is a team that had 10 draft picks and really 4 or 5 roster spots to fill, so they didn't need 10 draft picks. They don't have a lot of glaring needs. They've drafted really well in recent years, thanks to John Dorsey, and now they feel they got a quarterback that can be Andy Reid's Brett Favre in Kansas City.
Let's talk a little bit more about Patrick Mahomes, because everything that I've seen from Mahomes, even in pieces that are meant to be complimentary of him, is just how his mechanics are so poor that there's no way he could throw the ball the way that he currently throws the ball in the NFL and expect to have the success he had in college. And I sort of look at, I understand, like, we can't really compare the apples and oranges of one player to another player, but there really hasn't been that quarterback out of that Texas Tech system that's had any real success in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think the whole air raid quarterback, the air raid offense, you have disciples that have gone throughout the league since Mike Leach and since Hal Mumby in the 1980s and 90s, kind of proliferated that the air raid offense. No quarterbacks had success, zero. I mean, Sam Bradford may be the best case example, but teams still feel confident drafting those guys. And you know, we look at Mahomes in that offense, and it seems like a really, you know, bad situation, but pretty much it's the same offense Jared Goff ran at Cal, and teams were anxious to invest in him as the first overall pick. So I think the offense adjustment won't be as big, but like I said, teams were really impressed with him mentally at the whiteboard, and I think teams were surprisingly confident in him as a guy that, all right, he can pick up this offense pretty quickly. Jared Goff impressed there as well, but Jared Goff has that ability, arm talent, Patrick Mahomes does. But you know, I keep going back to that arm talent. His arm strength and his ability to kind of flick his wrist and throw it 60 yards on the move, on the run, outside the pocket, off balance, really only similar to Matt Stafford and Brett Favre as prospects. I mean, that's how special this arm talent is. You get a guy with elite arm talent with the flashes on film you want to see and the mental capacity to pick up things in the books. You got to assume Andy Reid, that offense, can spend a full year this offseason and all year just refining that footwork, refining that technique, and taking advantage of that upside. I don't think we've seen a quarterback with this much talent get a chance to really get a redshirt year in the NFL and have a chance to be successful.
But see, Brett Favre. So to me, that just seems like a lot of ifs. There's a lot of ifs in there. If he can pick it up, if they can work on that footwork, if he can improve all of that. And yes, I'm not going to deny that he, you know, has the potential to do all of that. And obviously that arm strength is tremendous. I mean, watching the kid on his knees throw almost 70 yards downfield, that's impressive. That's undeniably impressive.
I think it's a little bit more than that too, though, is that he's able to control that velocity so well. This isn't just a guy with a fastball arm. He controls it so well. And I will say he has a lot of work to do in checkdowns. He misses a lot of easy throws to go down the field, and that's that gunslinging mentality. But again, keep in mind too, as you know, gunslinger term is thrown around a lot. There's a guy who threw almost 600 passes this year, only had 10 interceptions. That was the best attempts to interception ratio, I think one of the top 2 or 3 in FBS football last year. So he's a guy with a remarkable arm who can control that velocity. Well, I think has a lot of short area passing game and really safer passes to develop it, but a guy who hasn't historically turned the ball over. Again, I'm a huge Mahomes fan. I have been all year. He's been our top quarterback, and actually he's our top quarterback in terms of our pre-draft grade between the last 2 quarterback classes above Goff and Wentz and Paxton Lynch. I think Mahomes is special. I think Kansas City couldn't be a better fit for him. And that's the big question now, is that, you know, we can grade these quarterbacks pre-draft, but so much matters where they go after the draft. I remember being at the 2012 NFL draft. I was there in New York City, and I saw the Jaguars take Blaine Gabbert, and I knew right then it wasn't going to work out for Blaine Gabbert in the NFL. If he goes to Cincinnati, maybe it's a different story. But I think where these guys land is far more important than what their college film might indicate what they could be. I think Trubisky, Mahomes, and hopefully Deshaun Watson all actually landed in pretty good spots that aren't going to watch them play.
And maybe it just, for me, I have to start to reevaluate what the real value of a quarterback is in the NFL, because I agree, he is in a perfect situation now where he has a full year to develop with a coach that had a quarterback with similar talent to him. So he's in a perfect situation. My thought about the Chiefs is that's a team that is a Super Bowl contender. And if I really look at what they did in the first round, they didn't do anything to improve their current situation to contend for that Super Bowl. And we know that you can't go into the next season standing pat thinking you're going to be in that same position as you were in the previous year. So that is really where I look at the Chiefs and what they did in this draft.
Well, I think the biggest question I throw back to you is then, okay, so what has been holding the Chiefs back these last 2 years? They have been fantastic running the ball. Jeremy Maclin and their host of receivers have been capable. Travis Kelce has been great. Their defense at all three levels has had really special talent throughout the board. I think most would argue the one thing holding them back is probably Alex Smith. And I think I knew the quarterback was the one spot that, yes, they could add a linebacker at 27. So they wanted to do it. They didn't get Mahomes as go inside linebacker. They could have added another receiver like a lot of their guys. They could have had a top-end running back. But I think most would agree that the Chiefs, what's holding them back to be a Super Bowl contender is quarterback. And they weren't going to sign a guy or trade for one of the top 10 quarterbacks in football. So you take a quarterback in the top 10 who you think could be a top 10 quarterback in football in the long run. So I think they could have addressed more needs, but you know, they didn't get any worse. They're still going to be a Super Bowl contender, or I guess a AFC West contender with Alex Smith at the quarterback helm. And I think by 2018, they could be a legitimate Super Bowl contender if Patrick Mahomes tapped into that potential.
Yes, I would also say that this is contingent on the fact that Alex Smith is a Chief for this full season. If they decide, because I saw the rumors that they were shopping Alex Smith now, if they shop Alex Smith now, then everything that they've done this offseason, to me, was a mistake by the Chiefs. They shouldn't have re-signed Eric Berry if they were going to start over at the quarterback position now, because that would be foolish. You might as well rebuild this full season and then go for that Super Bowl next year. But that's, again, a lot of ifs, ands, and buts thrown in there. Let's go back to your quarterback rankings that you had mentioned, because I'm looking at your tweet here. You're at Optimum Scouting on Twitter. And your pre-draft quarterback rankings from 2016 and 2017 had Mahomes at 1, Patrick Lynch at 2, Deshaun Watson 3, Carson Wentz 4, DeShone Kizer 5, Jared Goff 6, and Mitch Trubisky at 7. And you said, and you've said you still feel pretty good about these. You admit that you missed on Dak Prescott. Where would you put Dak in that group of 7 there?
Yeah, again, that ranking is based upon our pre-draft grades, and we do our draft grades for the media as well as the NFL teams as well. So they'll hold us accountable for those grades. But you know, you never feel it's always interesting to kind of where you want to look back even a year in the last draft class. And we were not in love with Carson Wentz or Jared Goff. And Paxton Lynch was our top quarterback last year, similar to Patrick Mahomes, although he's not nearly as talented. Is that, you know, the upside is certainly there. And you want to take a quarterback in round 1, it's not about getting a safer guy. That's the one question mark I have with Deshaun Watson in Houston, is kind of what is his upside? You know, he's going to be a guy in Houston that's going to be, hey, he's got to win them the Super Bowl now. Again, similar to Kansas City, they're a quarterback away from being a legit Super Bowl contender. And I think more than the Chiefs, they have so many weapons on offense to utilize. But now Watson's got to do that. And if he considered a failure, if they don't win a Super Bowl with him as a quarterback, I think the upside question mark is there. But I think with Lynch and Mahomes, I see a guy, both guys, that could be one of the top 5 or 6 quarterbacks in football if they reach their potential. I never saw that with Wentz and Goff. And I think Trubisky, you know, he's a guy that we make our grades and our draft guide in February and some by March. But I talked to more and more teams after that. And Trubisky certainly grew on me as I talked to more and more scouts. So I won't change my grade, but I think I got a much better picture of why so many teams thought Mitch Trubisky was not only the best quarterback in this draft class, but one of those rare top 10 grades that says that a team feels a quarterback's going to be an elite one. And the Chicago Bears certainly had that.
I my thoughts on Trubisky in relation to this draft class was that he might have been the most polished of the candidates at this point, but had the lowest ceiling of all the candidates. So
is that Watson or Trubisky?
Trubisky. That was sort of what my thoughts and what I was hearing, and sort of where I sort of lied my opinion with this particular quarterback draft class. But see, I'm also a little biased on this because on this particular podcast, we spent a number of weeks sort of breaking down that 2013 draft class, and there's not a single quarterback from 2013 that we can look at and go, oh, that was fantastic. What a great pick. And really, there's not a single quarterback in that draft class that we're like, oh, that we have a lot of confidence in. And now the Bears have one of those quarterbacks in Mike Glennon and traded up to get Mitch Trubisky, who you have at the bottom of your rankings.
Yeah, I think that was a bold move by the Bears. And really, the Mike Glennon signing was never going to be the long-term indictment of what their quarterback situation was going to be. It was always going to be a quarterback, and everyone in the league expecting to be a quarterback in the first two rounds. Now, most teams felt that it could be a trade back from 3 to 8 to get Mahomes or get Deshaun Kizer in early round 2. That's what most teams have been pegged. And really, no team I talked to, and I saw a lot of internal mock drafts across the NFL, had Trubisky as a 3rd overall pick. But you know, I mentioned to Bears fans on Twitter in an article, there's no reason to be pessimistic now. Trubisky's your quarterback, and there's reason to think he could be high-level quarterback in the NFL. Every reason I think he could be. The potential is there. I would have taken him there if I was a GM, but the Bears did and they believe in him. And I think the upside is there to develop behind Mike Glennon for a full year. Really, their whole 2017 draft is built for 2018. And I think if Trubisky can show some flashes towards the end of the year, and if Mike Glennon can keep this team from going, you know, 4-12, they can be a 7-9, 8-18 with Glennon. He can be a quality NFL starter or a backup long-term. They've got two quarterbacks who can kind of handle their offense moving forward, but I think the Bears overall had a really high ceiling draft, and I think Trubisky kicks that off.
My last question for you in regards to this draft is, which skill position player went into the best situation, taking the quarterbacks out of it at this point? Which skill position player is going to have the most impact for his team right off the bat?
Yeah. You know, I think McCaffrey is such a cool landing spot. We'll see what Carolina does, but I think Carolina may have too many weapons to play with, and that sounds like a weird idea, but having too many guys is sometimes hard for an offensive coordinator. And, you know, you have McCaffrey, Curtis Samuel, Calvin Benjamin, Devin Funchess, and Greg Olsen to split between, you know, 35, 40 attempts. Not a lot of things to go around, and that's how guys get frustrated or guys be forced the ball. But the thing I'm most curious about is Mike Williams in San Diego. I think Phillip Rivers has been one of the top 7 or 8 quarterbacks in football for the last 7-8 years. And he's been suffering through frustrating injuries to Keenan Allen and a lot of receivers over these last couple of years. I think Mike Williams, you know, if he can stay healthy himself, and he really had the one neck injury that almost cost him his career, but outside of that, he's been really healthy and that seems to be all fine. I think Williams could be, you know, quickly that team's, if not number one receiver, the biggest impact guy for that offense. And Keenan Allen, Travis Benjamin, a lot of their guys are so good in the short area and after the catch, but they really don't have a guy who can dominate in the red zone. I think Mike Williams can be that. So I think if Rivers, who I'm sure had a lot of fingerprints on picking Mike Williams, can make an impact early on in training camp, Williams could be a, you know, I dare say 8 to 10 touchdown season type player this year for the San Diego Chargers. Los Angeles Chargers, excuse me.
It's going to take a while to get used to calling them that.
Yeah.
Eric, where can people find you?
Yeah, best place to find me is twitter.com/optimumscouting. Into my profile page as well as over at Sporting News, where I'm the lead NFL draft analyst, is my 2018 mock draft. So any draft junkies out there wanting to go for 2018, my first round mock draft over at Sporting News. But I'll take a little hiatus from the media side of things for a little while, but certainly starting at the end of May and early June will be a lot of training camp focuses, and I'll be traveling around the country for training camp travels and Sporting News. So it'll be a fun offseason for me to do some NFL team consulting work, but really back in June we'll be back in the media. But again, twitter.com/optimumscouting. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it, and I would be remiss if I didn't have you expound on the last tweet that you sent out. I'm getting myself ready for these types of 2018 draft takes, which was in response to a tweet saying that the 2018 quarterback class might be better than 1983.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure who the next year's class Dan Marino is going to be. but everyone's excited about it. And I'll just say this, you know, the grass is always greener for next year's quarterback class. And next year's quarterback class, in all honesty, does seem to be really impressive. But we've seen this before, and I always mention Christian Hackenberg as a guy who everyone had pegged for the first overall pick in the 2015 NFL draft and ended up falling to late round two and maybe never playing quarterback in the NFL. So reason for pessimism, but I think it's an unbelievable quarterback class, a lot of talent. Hopefully, if it's only two or three of those guys hit, it'll be a really strong class next year. But 1983 is a good book, but it's also a reason to kind of be cautious on what predicting a quarterback class might be.
Awesome. Well, Eric, thanks for joining us on the Next Fan Up podcast, and we'll try not to make it so long between visits next time.
Yeah, keep me busy this offseason, guys. I'd appreciate that.
Eric Galco, good stuff there as always, and we will definitely try and catch him before the next draft season begins. Andy, yeah, talking about next year's quarterbacks and already comparing them to the class of 1983, that's an impressive quarterback draft class. Maybe a little too soon?
Yeah, hashtag too soon for sure. I find it hilarious how everybody always says that next year's quarterbacks are the quarterbacks to get, regardless of which year we are. And you look at the top three guys, there's Josh Rosen from UCLA, who frankly has not done very much at the college level yet. I mean, last year, pretty sure he threw like 30 touchdowns against like maybe 15 picks. He didn't look that good. And then of course, Sam Darnold from USC. And then the guy from Western Michigan. I forget his name.
Josh Allen.
Wyoming. Right. He's a very tall, Osweiler type. Probably a lot better, but it's everyone always wants the quarterbacks next year. And one thing that I think is very important to be wary of is the college football season ends in mid-January, and the NFL draft isn't really until late April. And between January and April, these quarterbacks get poked and prodded just so vigorously that their stock either rises or falls. You know, if you were to take Taj Boyd, going into the 2013 season, or let's put it this way, at the end of the 2012 season, at the end of Taj Boyd's junior year, people were saying, oh, he's going to be the first overall pick next year. Where did he get picked? He wasn't picked. Undrafted free agent. Had Matt Barkley left college after the 2011 season instead of after the 2012 season, he would have been the third quarterback taken after Luck and Wilson, or after Luck and Griffin. He would have been taken before Tannehill. Where did Barkley end up being taken? Oh, I don't know, the fourth round. It's just very dangerous to project these quarterbacks on a 12-month basis. And, I saw Sam Darnold play that Penn State game where he put up like 60 points, threw for like 550 yards or whatever he did. And obviously he looked fantastic, but I don't know. I don't think it's good to evaluate quarterbacks until you have to. And it's just way too early to look at these guys and say that they're going to be this or they're going to be that. One of the best tweets that I saw draft weekend last weekend was DEC Management. It's a talent management firm. They have athletes, they have singers, they have entertainers. There's just a bunch of agents. And the agent after the Mahomes trade, DEC tweeted out, good job, guys. Keep on reaching for those quarterbacks. That's why everyone gets fired, and that's why the caliber of play is so low. And I agree with the first part of that. Reaching for a quarterback is what gets you fired. And I have a feeling all three of these guys next year are going to be taken in the top 10. And history tells us only one out of those three is going to become anything worthwhile.
By the way, Eric has in his mock, and he made the draft order the reverse order of the 2018 Super Bowl odds. So the Jets with the first overall go with Sam Darnold. Then the fourth pick, the Los Angeles Rams take Josh Rosen, which would mean they're out on Goff pretty quickly. The sixth pick is the Jaguars, my boyfriend's, taking Josh Allen quarterback. Well, I admit, similar to what Eric said about the Chiefs, and the only thing that would hold the Jaguars back would be their quarterback. My boyfriends are not taking a quarterback next year. Blake Bortles is going to prove that he's the real deal. then pick number 11, the Redskins go with Mason Rudolph, quarterback from Oklahoma State. And I saw another one. Yes, the Cardinals at 18 with Lamar Jackson of Louisville. And I think that's it for quarterbacks in his 2018 mock draft. You can check it out, sportingnews.com. Eric Delco, great stuff. Kevin, do you want to jump in on the thoughts here on the quarterbacks?
I do agree with Andy somewhat that it's definitely way too early to project into next year. But with that said, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, and Josh Hill is his name from Wyoming. They've been hyped up for a pretty long time, much longer than the quarterbacks that were taken this year. I mean, did anyone hear of Patrick Mahomes after the 2016 draft? No. And did anyone hear of anyone besides Deshaun Watson, really? I don't think so. So those people, that's what you have to be wary of. The people who just come out of nowhere and because of their arm strength, throwing in shorts to receivers running routes with no DBs, that skyrocket, that's what you have to be wary of. And that's something I never understood why GMs and teams just, I mean, I guess I do understand why they scramble. I mean, you need a quarterback to win in this league, but that's just shooting yourself in the foot. You just can't, if you have to convince yourself that someone's good, instead of knowing they're good, it's probably not a good idea, in my opinion. And just one last thing, I think the Jaguars are definitely going to draft a quarterback next year because, as everyone knows who listens to this cast, not the biggest Bortles fan in the world.
Well, listen, you know, my whole love of the Jaguars does hinge tremendously on the performance of Blake Bortles. And I've seen the stats and I've seen his performance. And it's a big leap of faith to believe that Bortles can overcome his shortcomings to bring that team into the playoffs. But I think he's going to do it. He's got the weapons. He's got the right team around him to make it happen.
One last thing on Bortles, please.
Yeah.
He definitely does have the weapons, but let's not forget the stat that he has more pick sixes than wins in his career. Maybe it's he has the same amount because I think the Jaguars may have won in week 16 or 17 last year. I can't really remember. And also, if you look at Blake Bortles' stats, all of them are in the third quarter and fourth quarter. None of them are in the first half, especially in the first quarter when you need to get off to a good start. I think he has five or six career touchdown passes in the first quarter. And why is all his stats in the third and fourth quarter? It's because the Jaguars are down 20 points and the defense is just playing prevent D or coverage. So his stats, like when he had 35 touchdowns 2 years ago, those were the flukiest numbers of all time. And it tricked the Jaguars into thinking he made good progress, which he obviously did not.
Yeah, well, that's why they've got Leonard Fournette now. All right. Let's move on. Let's move off the Jaguars because I have a feeling we'll be talking about them again a little bit later on when we get into the fantasy chat. But Rob, news that came out of the draft, literally the day after the draft, and literally right while we were recording our draft recap. If you've missed our draft recap, what are you doing? Go back and listen to our archive on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, AHA Radio, anywhere great podcasts are heard. And leave us a review while you're there. But Rob, your GM got shown the door.
Yes, finally. The Bills have finally did the proverbial cleaning of the house and got rid of all the talent evaluators over at One Bills Drive. To be honest, I'm pretty happy about it. I wasn't the hugest fan of Whaley and a lot of the moves he did. He the trade up for Watkins, regardless of who was there at nine where they would have picked, a lot of Bills fans go, oh, well, Odell Beckham was there at nine. Yeah, the Bills could have took him. They probably wouldn't. But, just trading that much for Sammy Watkins, who now they didn't pick up his fifth year option rights. The Bills have just been, from a salary cap perspective, have been a mess, as seen by the New England Patriots poaching two of their complementary players off their roster with restricted free agency. So they're looking for a GM now. It looks like it's going to be someone who is aligned with Sean McDermott, the new coach, who's off the Ron Rivera, Andy Reid, tree. So it's going to be a much better fit. And just early returns, the draft, the Bills trading back, 17 picks and picking up an extra first rounder is definitely not something that would have happened, when Whaley was, in charge of the draft board. So I feel like this is a good turn for the Bills, and maybe we can become something more than, a winning team in September and, kind of fizzling out the rest of the way and maybe be an actual functioning football team.
Well, your team has proven that they can win in the later months. They just do it in New England. So I'm going to troll you all season long with that.
That's fine. You paid $5 million for a guy that caught 36 passes. Enjoy it. Have fun.
It was nice. Who ultimately made the decision on not picking up Watkins' fifth-year option if they fired their GM? Who's
McDermott. McDermott's calling the shots now. As evident, there's no scouts, there's no GM, and they brought in Barnage, the released tight end from Cleveland, in for a visit yesterday. So, it tells you, McDermott is running the show. They're going to be doing a model similar to New England, similar to Seattle, where the coach is the one in charge and kind of collaborates with the GM, but the coach is going to be kind of the ultimate decision maker on any type of conflicts.
This is McDermott's first go round, though. That's kind of a lot to put on a rookie coach, no?
Yeah. Well, when you're the Buffalo Bills, you don't necessarily get, the options. You got to sometimes take a chance, maybe think a little outside the box. So, we're optimistic. The Bills haven't made the playoffs in 17 years. So, you got to try something, right?
I suppose so. You can't keep doing what you're doing and expect different results. Speaking of hoping for different results, can the Broncos think they've upgraded their running back core by signing Jamaal Charles? Do you have fear there now with the Jamaal Charles-led backfield in Denver?
Vader, have you seen the movie The Incredibles?
I have. I love The Incredibles. It's my favorite Pixar movie.
Do you know when the big fat guy walks into the office and his boss goes, "Not happy, not happy"? That's how I feel about this stupid signing of Jamaal Charles, because if he's healthy, they're going to be really good in the run game, because Jamaal Charles doesn't even need that good of blocking to be amazing. Like, he's already really good. So I'm kind of pissed that he went inside the division, but you know what? At the end of the day, he's just a hardworking guy trying to do his job. So I'm not going to burn his jersey or anything or hope that he gets injured. But if he does get injured, if that happens, I won't be sad for my team, but I will for him as a person.
Well, I still have C.J. Anderson, who proved to be capable, at least, as a lead back last season. And I have to imagine they're probably going to rely a little bit more on a committee approach, just like the Raiders will with Marshawn Lynch. You said you had a few comments about Marshawn Lynch signing with the Raiders, Ken.
Man, I didn't want to talk about this on the air, but it's getting to a point where I have to, because I hate to admit it. This is embarrassing as a super fan on the Next Fan Up podcast. This is embarrassing to say that I've been considering switching teams, but this Marshawn Lynch to the Oakland Raiders thing really has me in a bind, because on the one hand, I hate the Raiders. I love the Chargers, and I've hated the Raiders since I was a little kid. On the other hand, the Chargers basically spat in my face when they said, "We care more about our family's money than we do about you as a fan." And so while I have like four Chargers jerseys, when the Raiders move to Las Vegas, if I'm no longer a Chargers fan,
it's going to be the first jersey I buy, even if it's a throwback, because Marshawn Lynch is one of the funniest NFL players that we've ever seen, or at least in my lifetime, I've ever seen. Like, I just love the guy. He's joyful. Like, he plays the game hard. He, you know, he's hilarious with the media. He's just a dude who's good at football, who's loving life. And so if he joins the, you know, if the Raiders go to Las Vegas and I'm no longer a fan of the Chargers, I'm switching teams, baby.
Wow. Now, Andy, your owner voted against this move to Las Vegas. I mean, Ken just said that he's going to switch teams because the Chargers spat in his face, and yet the Raiders have done the same thing to Oakland. I think they've done it even more so by making this move, by signing the hometown boy, so that they could sell out their stadium for 2 years while they're building the new one in Las Vegas.
Yeah, what did you know? The money side of the NFL is a pretty ugly one. Surprise, surprise. As far as Lynch is concerned, well, let's talk about Jamaal Charles first. Great signing, very low risk, all reward. Jamaal Charles absolutely has something left in the tank. I don't know if he's a 200 touch guy, but he's good enough still to definitely cause problems for opposing teams. And from a Dolphin fan perspective, we play the entire AFC West next year. So I would have liked for him to go somewhere else, but I guess we'll deal with it. And in terms of Marshawn Lynch, and I actually forgot that Lynch was born and raised in the Bay Area. I totally forgot that, but I think it's going to be a good homecoming. Marshawn Lynch, another guy who also has probably something left in the tank. I think sitting this year out was probably more of a good thing than a bad thing for him. And it'll be interesting though to see how he fits with, because I think in a perfect Raider world, I think they spread the ball out, or I think they spread the offense out and throw it all over the place. And Marshawn Lynch isn't exactly equipped to be that type of back. Not to say that he needs to be, you know, running behind a fullback in the I formation as if it was the 1980s. He's not that either. But the fit, I don't think the fit is great, but he's a good enough player where they're going to make it work.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Lynch move. I think there's a reason why Marshawn Lynch retired in the first place. Hey, look who joined us, ladies and gentlemen. It's our Eagles superfan, James. James, what's happening?
Not much. I got held up a little earlier. Completely lost track of time. Apologies, everyone. But I did hear you all talking about the running back signings. And across the board, as far as Lynch and Charles, I think they're both good signings for their respective teams.
Let's look at this from a fantasy perspective as we transitioned into some fantasy talk. Rob, you did the Daily Fantasy show there for a little while last season. Which of those AFC West running backs, how would you rank those AFC running backs?
As far as the two we're talking about today, I would put Lynch, just because I think Lynch is going to have more opportunity, and Lynch is going to get goal line carries. I think, you know, Charles is my inkling is Charles is still going to have talent. He's a good back, but I think he's going to be, you know, an 8 to 10 touch guy. You know, there's C.J. Anderson, although he, you know, is a little bit of an injury guy. When he's healthy, I thought he played pretty well in, you know, Denver's zone blocking scheme. And then if Devontae Booker can fix his fumbling problems, you know, you got three backs right there that are, you know, I'd say Jamaal Charles is probably the best of those three, but all three of them are probably going to get a little bit, you know, get some carries. They were running after C.J. Anderson got hurt, they were running kind of a three-headed monster last year. Capri Bibbs even got in it a little bit. I think with Oakland, Money Lynch is going to get a good chunk of the carries, and he's also going to get the goal line carries because there's not the name's escaping me, but the backup there in Oakland is more of a speed guy, so he's not going to really be in on those short yardage situations. So I think just based on that alone, Money Lynch is going to be, you know, the higher ceiling guy of the two.
Ken, is your running back going to finally show up?
Melvin Gordon?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's huge. I mean, if he's hurt
maybe not. But I actually met the guy last year, and he came into where I was working, and my girlfriend texts me, and she goes, there's a Charger player in here. And I go, who? And she goes, I don't know. And so I walk over to where he was, and I see this massive human. And I go up to him, and I'm like looking at him, and I'm like, holy, it's Melvin Gordon. And he was with this super hot girl, and they were on a date at like this amusement park in at San Diego State. But if he's right, if his body is healthy, there's nothing that can stop that guy, especially now that we've upgraded the line with our left tackle in Okung. Hopefully he stays healthy, blah, 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 blah. I have full confidence in Marshawn Lynch. Or not Marshawn Lynch, Melvin Gordon.
Can I say something about Sir Melvin?
Go for it, Kevin.
First off, if you go up to any NFL player, one, they're physically imposing, and two, most likely they have a super hot girlfriend with them. So that means nothing. Third of all,
he's not wrong.
Hey, I'm better at telling stories than you, so I'm better at telling third stories of all, than you. So just let me handle the storytelling here.
Okay, you can handle the future storytelling. And third of all, I think there is some concern for Melvin Gordon. Yeah, he had a decent year last year, but you know what his yards per carry is for his career? It's 3.7. It's not very good. Not very good
hold
at
on,
all.
Hold on. You need to go listen to Christopher Harris at the Harris Football Podcast, because yards per carry mean nothing.
How does it mean nothing?
Go listen to Christopher Harris. I'll tag him. I'll tweet out a thing and ask him if he wants to listen to this, and then he can educate you about yards per carry.
Well, first of all, I know
he also has seven fumbles in his career, which is not good.
That's a problem.
One and a half seasons.
That's a real problem, for sure.
By the way, I know
fumble last year.
I know Christopher Harris. Christopher Harris is a friend of mine. He's not listening to this.
There you go. Exactly.
Go ahead, James.
Exactly.
Now, I was saying, Melvin Gordon, pretty much, I'm not going to say he fixed it, but most of those fumbles came his rookie season, where basically he just found them on the bench. And he was also riddled with injuries. Last year, he played pretty well once thrust into the starting lineup, or at least given the majority of the carries, only due to injury to,
Woodhead.
Danny Woodhead, yeah. So, I mean, one, is Danny Woodhead coming back is my first question.
Well, he's signed with the Ravens. So, yeah.
Oh, well, there's that. So now Melvin Gordon is the lead back. So now you raise those two questions again. He had a good season last year because he didn't fumble as much, and the games that he played throughout to the end of the year, he stayed relatively healthy. I don't think he missed much time, if any, probably a couple of snaps a game here or there, but I don't think he missed an entire game at any point in the season based on what I saw, though he probably would have wanted to miss that Cleveland Browns game that I called right, you know, at the end of the year. Melvin Gordon should be fine going forward, but again, if they teach him to hold the ball like Coughlin taught Tiki Barber how to hold the ball later in his career in New York, then Melvin Gordon should be an above-average back in the league. I'm not going to thrust him into stardom or say top back in the league at this point, but I'd probably go Lynch in this division first. Barring injury and fumbleitis, then I'd go Melvin Gordon, Jamal Charles, and whatever Denver's doing afterwards and last, because they're still doing Kansas City last, because they're still going to do back by committee over there. There's no really true lead back in KC, and Charles is pretty much still going to split time in Denver with whoever's there still in their backfield.
Did Kansas City draft a running back? Anybody know?
I was trying to remember. I don't remember.
Yeah, they drafted Kareem Hunt. They traded up to get him. He's going to fit that system well. He'll be the starter in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, right now you're looking
fantasy
at Spencer
for this year.
Fantasy
Spencer Ware, right?
Spencer Ware and Charchandrick West are the two that are currently listed on their roster.
Right, yeah. That doesn't really scare you in any way, shape, or form. And those guys pretty much split time, you know, all last year anyway, so...
I mean, Charchandrick West is not very good. And Spencer Ware, he if you look at his stats, he is pretty good. But further investigation into them, I saw that even though our Chargers superfan over there for some reason thinks that yards per carry means nothing for God knows what reason.
Just because of math.
In the first six games last year, Spencer Ware averaged 4.5 yards per carry or more 5 out of 6 times. 2 of them in the five yards per carry range, and 1 of them over 6. In the remaining weeks, he did that only 2 games, with multiple games in the 2s and low 3s. So I don't think he's fit to be a long-term back for the whole year, the solely number one workhorse. And Kadeem West or whatever his name is, it's sort of easy to say, but I think he draws a lot of parallels to Jamal Charles, similar back, both taken in the third round by the Chiefs. So I think Rob is right. Definitely a starter in Kansas City come 2018.
Let's see here. I mean, who else do you like? We were mentioning dynasty rookies and during the pre-show warm-up here. You had mentioned that the Titans rookie, Corey Davis, is the one that's going to get overdrafted the most.
Yeah, and, you know, Andy brought it up. I think he's right. He's going to be, because he's a high pick, because he's going to be, you know, a number one receiver for that offense, people are going to fall all over him. He's been kind of, from what I've seen in dynasty league, like startup leagues and stuff, and rookie drafts, he's being touted as, you know, the first overall pick ahead of Fournette, which I think is a little silly. You know, it's a run first offense. Until that changes, the ceiling is capped a little bit. And he's an injury guy and he fumbles quite a bit. For me, I mean, under the radar guys that I like, I mean, it's so early in the process, but I like Jamal Williams, the running back. He played at BYU. He got drafted by Green Bay. I just think that they don't really, I mean, they're calling Montgomery their starter, but I think that, you know, there's opportunity there for Jamal Williams. I like Jamal Williams a lot, you know, pre-draft. I thought that if he ended up on the right team, he could be really good. And I think he did end up on one of those teams. You know, that's a guy for me that at this point, when it's so early, just keep that in mind, that I'm a huge fan of.
Andy, let's throw it to you since Rob brought that up, and you were the one that brought up the Corey Davis note.
Yeah. I just think, first of all, I just think wide receiver is a really robust learning curve position. Like Odell Beckham catching 85 balls for a billion yards as a rookie in 2014, that just doesn't happen very often. So in terms of pointing to a highly drafted, or not necessarily highly drafted, in terms of pointing to an offensive player who's a rookie that I want, I think, and I say the following with the knowledge that I've done nothing but bash this kid since September, largely, admittedly, because he doesn't look like what I think a running back should look like, and interpret that how you will. But Christian McCaffrey, given the situation that he landed in, I think Christian McCaffrey is going to have a very, even if he ends up not being good, you don't have, as a running back who gets the football 20 times a game, you don't actually have to be good to be a good fantasy player. You know, the example I always like to use, and these two players are completely different. I mean, he's different from McCaffrey, but in 2011, Sean Green, who's probably the slowest man to ever step on a football field, was the number 13th ranked running back in fantasy football. Why? Because the Jets ground and pounded and fed him the ball 280 times. So, you know, and not to say that I think McCaffrey, you know, but I think Christian McCaffrey, given the situation he landed in, I think he's going to be probably the number one rookie in fantasy football. Gun to my head. Number one non-quarterback, of course.
I have to totally disagree with that. And Kevin, I'll let you jump in. But Jonathan Stewart is still there. I don't see McCaffrey getting his 20 touches as a running back.
But he's also a slot receiver, though.
He is. And so he's going to, that's where he'll make his points in fantasy for sure. But I still don't see 20 touches there. I mean, we brought it up a little bit with Eric, too, that the Panthers almost have too many weapons now to try and spread that ball around between Kelvin Benjamin, Greg Olsen, McCaffrey, and Jonathan Stewart. By the way, Greg, our Steelers super fan, wanted to know who Kelvin Benjamin ate, as he's apparently trying to catch up to Eddie Lacy in terms of weight gain.
Wow. Just one more quick thing on McCaffrey. I understand Jonathan Stewart's still there, but well, two things. Number one, McCaffrey is just as much a slot receiver as he is a running back. And number two, I don't buy any of this timeshare BS. You don't draft a kid with the 8th overall pick if you want him sitting on the bench for 40% of offensive snaps. You just don't. That's just not what NFL teams do. So then again, the Panthers do things that make me scratch my head. I mean, I don't think, despite their relative amount of success over the during the Cam Newton era, the Panthers, frankly, have never really struck me as a particularly well-run organization. So who knows? Who knows what they're going to do?
Kevin, go ahead.
Few things here. I sort of agree with Andy, unfortunately, about Christian McCaffrey, that he might be one of the best non-quarterback rookies in terms of fantasy, not just solely based on his pass catching ability. I mean, if you're in PPR, he's definitely worth an RB, a good RB3 to start the year with hopes of improvement, in my opinion. I mean, Cam Newton, everyone knows my feelings on him. It will be good for him to finally have a nice little check down receiver instead of throwing it deep every single play. Cause Jonathan Stewart is not a pass catching back, but where I do disagree with Andy is I don't think that Jonathan Stewart is going to be just run out of town completely this year. I mean, last year he had 10 touchdowns. The year before he had 7 touchdowns or 6 touchdowns. So he is going to definitely be used primarily as a goal line back, I would imagine, which is not good for McCaffrey in terms of fantasy purposes. But at the same time, Jonathan Stewart, as everyone knows, is injury plagued. So that would be good for McCaffrey. But now, this is probably not a popular opinion. I think the best rookie fantasy player this year who's not going to be a quarterback is easily going to be Joe Mixon. And why I say that is because on our draft podcast last week, I sort of said that Jeremy Hill is not very good, and I stand by that. He just has no explosiveness. He 3 yards in a cloud of dust every play, and every 80 or so carries, he breaks a big one. I mean, if you look at his stats, all of his fantasy value just strictly comes from games where he has like 10 carries for like 27 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's not a good running back. And then Gio Bernard, he has injury concerns as well, and he is mostly a pass catching back in my opinion. So I think Joe Mixon, come week 8, is going to sort of solidify himself as the Bengals' number one guy in the backfield there.
You just said come week 8 that he'll solidify himself.
I know. Okay. I know a rookie who will be make an immediate impact, I think, in the fantasy world if he gets on the same page as Rivers, and that is Mike Williams, because Rivers needed that deep, or not the deep threat, but just the big pass it up, let him go get it guy that we've needed for a long time. And I, you know, not to pat myself on the back or anything, but you know, I was pretty spot on with getting Mike Williams in the super fan super mock draft. And then we went out and we got him in real life. And so, you know, Joe Mixon might be the fantasy. He might win you your fantasy league if you draft him late enough. But Mike Williams is going to give you consistent. I bet you Mike Williams right now gets at least 5 touchdowns next year. And that's bare minimum, in my opinion.
And I still hate the Chargers.
That is a tall order for a rookie wide receiver. James, how about your rookies? You got anybody you're excited about on the skill position side?
You know, he just took the words out of my mouth, really, because in some type of pipe dream, alternate reality, the Philadelphia Eagles trade up and they get their hands on Mike Williams to pair with Carson Wentz. And, you know, they have this wonderful 8-10-year tandem together where they're just tearing the league apart. Reality reared its ugly head, and the Chargers pretty much just dashed all my hopes and dreams. I'm literally sticking with Mike Williams because I look at it this way. Mike Williams fits the mold of rookie wide receivers who do damage day one. He is physically imposing with both his height, his size, and his speed. And that's just one type of rookie wide receiver that typically makes an immediate impact wherever they're drafted. Phillip Rivers still has a cannon for an arm. I'm not really big on Phillip Rivers career-wise as being, quote, one of the all-time greats or anything like that. He's a very good quarterback, bordering on great at times. And as long as Mike Williams can stay healthy, Phillip Rivers will basically have a number one target for 16 weeks consistently. The other type of wide receiver that normally has an immediate fantasy impact is typically your short burner speed guys who end up on teams that are primarily run-oriented or balanced pass and run. And I say that, say, because they're typically getting the balls in your gadget plays. Who was the rookie for Kansas City last year who tore up the league in like the last 8 weeks of the season? Tyreek Hill?
Yep.
Fits the mold of that type of wide receiver who comes on the scene. They may not make the impact immediately within the first couple of weeks, but you look at that type of receiver, he's probably, 5'7", 5'8", runs faster than lightning, and they get him the ball all types of ways, whether it's in the return game, bubble screens, jet sweeps, end arounds, any type of gadget play where he's out there with a convoy in front of him and just let him just torch the field. You look at DeSean Jackson, his rookie year in Philadelphia, had a similar type of season. Pretty much had, 900 some odd yards and 8 or 9 touchdowns. Came in a variety of different ways the way Andy Reid deployed him. He did the same thing last year, Tyreek Hill. I look back at Kelvin Benjamin's rookie year, just shy of 1,000 yards. I think 8 or 9 touchdowns before, the injury took him out the next year. Tall, imposing receiver, Dez Bryant, his rookie year at Dallas was pretty solid as well. He made an immediate impact. So your wide receiver falls basically one of those two categories. The physical, imposing type who just towers over almost every DB they're going to line up against every single week. It's going to be a problem because you have the whole thing of just, call up Randy Moss, just throw it up there and I'll go get it. I'm not saying that he's going to have a Moss type season, or, you have the short little speed guy who's just a matchup nightmare because you never know what's coming at you when he's on the field. You know something is coming, you just don't know what or how. Those two type archetypes is pretty much what I see. Kelvin Benjamin is the former. So I think you'll have a pretty good year. I'd say 7-8 touchdowns in the receiving game, probably 8 to 9.
Mike Williams, oh my.
By the way, you guys are all wrong. It's Leonard Fournette, who's on my boyfriend Jaguars, shit. Who's going to dominate this league.
How did
league.
We forget?
I mean, seriously.
No, we didn't forget. I just remembered that Jacksonville is missing something called an offensive line that consistently gives any type of blocking whatsoever.
Hmm.
Oh, no, I'm with Todd on this one. We forgot.
Is Leonard Fournette blocking for himself?
Wait a second. He doesn't need a blocker. He is in everything, James.
No,
I agree. He could throw passes to himself in the end zone. He's amazing.
James and Pod, I definitely agree with Pod here. Definitely forgot about Fournette there. I mean, he probably will be the number one RB in fantasy for rookies just because no one is in that backfield is going to come close to taking his job away. So he'd be the starter day one, get a boatload of carries every game for 17 weeks. But now, Mike Williams. I do think Mike Williams is going to be a good pro, but this year I'm not sure he's going to have that big of a fantasy impact. And the reason is Keenan Allen, when he's on the field for 4 games before he tears his ACL, is Rivers' favorite target. Travis Benjamin and Tyrell Williams sort of are nifty players that Rivers likes. Tyrell Williams definitely developed a good rapport with Rivers at the end of last year. And also, Antonio Gates. Yeah, he's old, but he is one of Rivers' favorite end zone targets. And Hunter Henry, the rookie tight end from last year, also proved to be very capable in the passing game. So I'm not sure where Mike Williams is going to carve out his niche this year on the Chargers offense. They have a lot of weapons that Rivers likes, and especially in the red zone. So I'm not sure Mike Williams is going to be the guy to sort of target in terms of fantasy wide receivers. But now if he did go to Philly, I would like him a lot more just because it would be him and Alshon Jeffery and no one else because Torrey Smith isn't good.
I love this conversation about alternative universes where players are on other teams. This is fascinating.
Last thing. Yeah. When James was talking about the 5'9", 5'8" receivers who are just lightning fast, I agree with him that John Ross could have a very, very good rookie season just because A, he can take the top off the defense. Defenses more have to worry with AJ Green. I mean, can you think of a better rookie wide receiver situation than coming in with A.J. Green and Tyler Eifert. Tyler Eifert just controls the middle of the field. A.J. Green, you have to pay attention to on every snap. So every once in a while, like, they're going to lose track of John Ross, and he's going to go Tyreek Hill on them and beat them over the top. So I think John Ross is in pretty much an ideal situation for a rookie wide receiver, and I think he could easily be the number one rookie wide receiver this year, actually, just for those reasons alone.
All right, Rob.
I agree with that.
Well, there you go.
I agree with that. He's, I'll tell you what, just real quickly. You know, everyone talks about how fast of a guy is, and a lot sometimes those receivers are, you know, track guys who want to play football. This is a football player who happens to be really fast. He can run routes. He knows what he's doing on the football field. He can run short and intermediate things along with just, you know, going deep. He's a good receiver.
By the way, we are now over the hour mark, so it just goes to show, put a bunch of football fans together and we'll talk for as long as we possibly can. But we are now at that moment, Ken, the part of my outline that says Ken has a rant.
Go oh, baby, it. Buckle up. Buckle up, because this is going to sound crazy. Wow. All right, here we go. The problem with the NFL right now is the safety concerns are very real. And so parents are taking their kids out of football until like high school because they don't want them to get concussions. And so the NFL has tried to fix this PR problem by creating this idea of football is family. And that is so bullshit. I can't even begin to describe. Football is not about family. The NFL is about money. And so I have this theory that the good GMs are just running their teams like I did in eighth grade when I was playing franchise mode, which is they stockpile draft picks, sign key free agents in their prime, and then trade away any old player that costs a lot of money. And I've seen this with the Chargers, and they're trying to win the Super Bowl next year. So what do? They go out and they address the offensive line in free agency with Okun. Then they also get the big-time wide receiver that they didn't have last year, especially with all the injuries. And then they drafted two interior linemen, I believe, in the second and the third round. And they're gearing up for a Super Bowl run. So if they stay healthy, this is the crazy part of the rant, by the way. If they stay healthy, I think the Chargers have a decent shot of winning the Super Bowl next year, which is going to piss me off because crazy. We were 1 year away from having the parade in San Diego. And if that freaking parade does not come to San Diego after we win the Super Bowl next year, I'm switching to the Raiders immediately.
Question well, to your
that's
rant.
All I got.
What it's a good thing I don't have to worry about that.
Sure.
Because right. There will be no parades for the Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego.
Well, that just makes you that just hurts my feelings.
And question. What have they done defensively so far in this offseason?
They don't need to do actually I need to go look it up. I haven't been paying attention, to be honest with you. At school and finals. And
occasionally you may be explosive offensively, but occasionally you do have to stop the other team from scoring.
I know we did on defense. We
let Manti Te'o go to the Saints?
Manti Te'o is not that good. He's injury prone. We locked up Melvin Ingram, at least for 1 year. And then we also have Bosa. So them two plus the good corners that we have. Again, this is all relying on health. Our safeties, we probably needed to address a safety. We might have drafted one. I can't remember. But Adai's a decent safety. And then Atauchu and Ingram and Bosa off the edge. Chargers are going to have one of the best defenses in the league next year with Verrett on the outside. I mean, seriously, they were really good defensively last year. They broke down on the offensive side of the ball. And then by the end of the year, the defense got too tired. So.
Yeah, I don't know. Kevin?
I think he's crazy, but that's well documented. I mean, I also think the Chargers don't have that bad of a defense. I mean, Joey Bosa just lit the world on fire last year. Melvin Ingram, after struggled his first couple of years, is turning into a very good player. And they do have a pretty good secondary. Although Jason Verrett, or however you pronounce his last name, I think he's a bit overrated. Yeah, he's good.
No,
but
he's injury prone.
And he's injury prone. But if you look at his stats before he got hurt last year, not the best. He was giving up a high completion percentage and quarterback rating when quarterbacks were targeting him. So last year, I mean, I think people were just saying he was good based on his reputation. I mean, that could have been because he was hurt before he had that season-ending injury. That may have hampered him. But, I mean, to say the Chargers have a legitimate shot at winning the Super Bowl this year is just crazy talk.
Well, okay, mark this down. I'm going to mark this in my calendar. And then next February, when the Chargers win the Super Bowl, we're going to create some sort of bet around this for whose team goes farther next year. I don't know what it's going to be.
2018 or 2019?
Whatever the next season is.
So the coming season is 2017.
Right.
2018 is
about.
Next season.
Okay, I will bet
2019 Super Bowl. Okay, 2 years.
I will bet whoever in the superfan community that my team will go have a better playoff success if I get some odds, because I'm not doing this with the Patriots or some really good team, but I think the Chargers are due for a bounce back. So I'd love to make a wager about it.
First you said Super Bowl and winning. Now you're saying just the playoffs. You're backtracking a little bit here.
Yeah, I'm a little low on sleep right now.
I bet you a grand that the Cowboys have next better 5 years than the Chargers do.
I'm right 22 here, years right old, so I'd have to take out a loan in order to pay that. So that's a cue.
Okay, $500.
Okay, I could do $20. That's where my bank account's at right now.
Oh.
Okay. Well, we'll talk in a few years.
Maybe. Maybe
ladies and gentlemen, this is where the show has fallen off the rails. But I appreciate the crazy rant for sure, Ken. That was
more to come. More to come.
That was a good crazy rant. By the way, I think my boyfriend Jaguars will get to the playoffs before your San Diego Chargers.
Oh, put that on the board. Put that
on the board
right now.
Well, that's a definite guarantee because the San Diego Chargers no longer exist.
Oh, you dude, that hurts my soul, man.
He's going to win that bet outright because there is no team in San Diego to go to the playoffs.
All right.
Stop reminding me of my agony.
I meant the Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego. All right.
There we go. Put it on the board.
On the board. It is official. On the board. The Jacksonville Jaguars get to the playoffs before the San Diego Chargers. Hey, last items here. We did get a couple of people that responded to my tweet asking for what topics weigh heavy on their mind post-draft. Kale wrote in saying last year's performance or lack thereof from the Panthers on-field leadership. We did spend some good time talking about the Panthers, Kale, so hopefully that helped ease a little bit of that weight off your mind. Brian wrote in, the impact of reports / potential false reports on players like Conley and Lyle Collins and their impact on draft day falls. Brian, I think that is a topic which we will not get into now because we are well over our 1 hour mark, but we will bring up in a future show for sure. And Richard writes in, the Lions running back saga and their current options or lack thereof. And Richard, that sounds like another great topic for us to get into in a later show. It would be even better if we could include a Lions superfan, for which we do not have one. So if you'd like to be the Lions superfan, Richard, just send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com, or reply to my tweet, or reply to a tweet by at NFL Podcast. We'll get you in on a show and we'll talk about the Lions running back saga. The absolute last thing I'm going to bring up is I just saw a tweet here from Adam Schefter. Jay Cutler apparently has tried out to replace John Lynch as a Fox TV analyst. Fox obviously not going the same route as CBS to fire their number one analyst in Troy Aikman. to replace him with Jay Cutler. Smart move there by Fox. But Jay Cutler, the analyst, Kevin, he's going to compete head to head with your boy, Tony Romo.
I would just like to know what happens at a broadcast tryout. That seems like it'd be an interesting place to be and just watch. But I don't know. Cutler, he obviously knows the game. I mean, do I think he would be a good broadcaster? Possibly. I mean, he's got to definitely improve his tone of voice for sure. But then again, he won't be dealing with media harassing him. So I would say that's quite possible. I mean, why not? It would be fun. Honestly, just having recent players go jump from the field to the broadcast booth, I think it may be the new wave. I mean, why not? It could make fans more interested, or borderline fans more interested, to tune in because they actually know the players. They were just on the field 12 months ago instead of people like Phil Simms who were on the field 25 years ago. But yeah, why not? I would give them a shot.
Well, the biggest problem with that is that they often won't say what they're actually thinking about those players because they're so buddy-buddy with them and they're so close that they're not actually going to rip them a new one when they deserve to be ripped. So they'll hold back on their criticism of the play that's going on. James, what do you think?
5 years in. Yeah, I was going to say that same thing. Typically, once they're initially out and, you know, listening to Mike Golic tell these stories every now and then, he said that when he transitioned from playing to reporting, immediately afterwards, players he still knew who were still playing refused to talk to him. And that lasted up until those guys left the league. So it's going to be the same thing with Jay Cutler. He's not going to pull the trigger and rip, like you said, rip anyone who actually needs ripping because they missed a block or they blew an assignment defensively. They ran the wrong route, fumbled the ball because they have issues with fumbleitis and everyone knows it. He's not going to go that route because he still knows some of these players. 5 years down the road, once the majority of those players have left the league, yeah, he'll rip the new guys who pretty much are starting from this day forward that he probably has little to no interaction with whatsoever. Because at that point, then he can do it. I mean, you look at Aikman right now, he pretty much bashes almost everybody because there's no one left from his era still playing. But if you remember when he first started with Troy Buck, he would never say anything bad about Dallas, period, no matter how god-awful they were. Think about the years with Quincy Carter as a quarterback. And
hey, Quincy.
I'm just being real here. As awful as Quincy Carter was, look, and I wanted Quincy Carter to succeed because very few quarterbacks of his skill set do. He refused to rip Quincy Carter for just the simplest mundane things a quarterback should be wary of. And, you know, once Tony Romo took over because he had no connection, he was basically just, you know, slurping the Kool-Aid. Now, whenever Tony messed up, Aikman would rip Tony for messing up. But you have this dynamic where, you know, the same thing's going to happen even with Tony Romo. He's not going to rip his squad, his former squad, or players that he played with that came through Dallas and our other teams. And Cutler's going to be the same way. Now, I do hope that Cutler does show some emotion and some passion that's visibly noticeable that comes across when he's broadcasting. Because as much as he says he does things a certain way on the field, did look like bland, vanilla, blah, uninspired everything.
No, definitely. If I can say one more thing about Cutler, I do agree with you, James and Pod. I didn't really think of that until you guys brought it up about having connections with the players. But in terms of Cutler, I would pitch that, you know what, Fox? I didn't really have a good relationship with anyone I ever played with, so I have no problem bashing them.
one last thing before we move on from the Jay Cutler thing.
We're moving on to trying to end the show, but go for it, Ken.
This is the last thing. This is the last thing. I think it'll make you laugh. When you're like, Jay Cutler is trying to replace whoever in the CBS booth, I thought you were going to say he's going to replace him. He's trying to replace him as the 49ers GM. And I was like, what the f***? How can he replace the GM when he just got there like 2 months ago? I was so confused.
Oh, and
the dispensary still open that early in San Diego?
No, they're not. But you can get that delivered. I just don't do that.
Oh my God. Bleep song. Bleep this podcast.
All right. On that note, we're going to let Ken go get some sleep. Hopefully.
Thank you.
Hopefully that will help with the potty mouth. I'm going to leave us with the Jay Cutler, and I will just let Jay know good luck. James, who never answered me about skill position players that his team drafted, because apparently he doesn't feel good about any of his skill position players that his team drafted. And Kevin, who it will be busy watching Jim Nantz talk about his football partner on the U.S. Open course. Rob, who snuck out of here, and Andy, who snuck out of here, and to everyone who's listened to this show, I leave you now, as Jeff Fisher has been officially fired, with the parting words of Pittsburgh Steelers backup quarterback Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.